right side.
Gordon kicks it to Matt Freeman.
I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.
What up, what up? This is Brother to Brother. I'm Dr. Nathaniel Chapman here with Dr. Keelan Hinton.
Good evening, good evening.
Yeah, so Brother to Brother, we're in our third or fourth episode. Just a reminder of what the show is. We get together, we have some conversations. This sparked from a conversation we had in our office, and we thought it'd be really dope if we just let you into our minds, have some conversations about any and everything, health, wealth, wellness. So just as a reminder, as you're tuning in, we appreciate you. And so you have an idea what we'll be talking about as the days go on.
Yeah, and we also want you to know, again, we thank you for joining us. As we always say, you could have been anywhere this evening, but you decided to hang with us, and peace and blessings to you, and we greatly appreciate it. Before we get started, we want you to know that any of the ideas, comments, suggestions, or perspectives that you hear on this show, or if you hear it as a podcast, are not represented by Marshall University, by any of its employees, any of its affiliates or sponsors, are not supported by WMUL, any of its employees, affiliates or sponsors or supporters, but are the sole perspectives, ideas, comments, suggestions, and perspectives of Dr. Nathan Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. So as we always say, take this advice at your own risk.
At your own risk. And do remember, my friend, this is not therapy. Now, as this topic might be a little heavier than some would like, we need heavy every now and then. I just want to give you that little reminder. And you might need some therapy. We'll just give you some recommendations should you happen to be in the Huntington area. If you are a student, you can go to the counseling center. If you're just a community member, you can go to the psychology clinic. Or you can go to Associates in Psychology and Therapy. Those would be some good resources for you, my friends.
All right. So let's rock and roll and let's get to it. Again, last week we tackled a pretty heavy subject. We talked about discipline. There was a video that went viral of a mother who was disciplining her child because her child had posted something online that she didn't like. And it ended up with her initially spanking the child with a belt. Then she started to swing and throw punches. And then from there, the little girl fell. So she fell. And the mom started to kick her. And not just ourselves, but a lot of people, quite understandably, were emotional by seeing the video. So we thought it would be interesting just to talk about the idea of discipline. When does discipline go too far? Okay. And there was a point in the video that not only did she beat her and spank her and curse her, but she told her to take her clothes off. So that brought about all these different elements, all these different emotional and psychological elements. Mm-hmm. And part of what we wanted to do was just to sort of talk about the issue and to talk about what are some of the psychological, emotional ramifications and some of the baggage that can come from being treated like this, particularly as a child. As a child, when maybe you don't have a strong sense of awareness and some of the coping skills and the emotional and identity strength you should have at that time, when you're at a critical time in your life, when you're trying to find yourself, when you're being shaped and molded into the person that you will be. So again, we want to continue to talk about discipline, the notion and idea of when is discipline gone too far, and then from there, other branches off this tree that sprang up, other ideas of humiliation and shame, how they come into the mix, and what are some of the psychological and emotional ramifications from being humiliated while you're being spanked or while you're being disciplined. And then from there, are there ways to let go? Are there ways to heal? How do we move on from some of this trauma that so many of us experience when we're kids?
Right, right. And I just wanted to add a couple more things there. When we talked about it last week, we really hit a lot of elements because this is a complex issue. You know, we talked about it, what it might be from the perspective of the parent. We talked about what it might be from the perspective of a child as they grow into adulthood. Mm-hmm. We talked about some of the ways it affect them developmentally, psychologically. We really looked at a lot of different angles. Once this becomes a podcast, if you haven't listened to the first episode, I recommend you go back and check that out. And as this subject might be heavy, one thing we were talking about as we thought about this, how we didn't, you know, we didn't see a lot of responses. We weren't sure if it was just too heavy. But it's the holiday season, you know, and there's a show, a movie that I like. It's called Four Christmases. I don't know if you've seen it. But it basically, one of the things that Vince Vaughn, his father, says in the movie is like, you can't spell family without lies. Hey, I'm not saying that's true for all families, but the thing is, these things exist. And though we want the holidays to be jolly for a lot of people, a lot of people have some of these things they haven't been able to talk to, haven't been able to work through. And we just speak into some of those things. Maybe for some people it might be healing or send them to a place where they can get some healing.
Exactly, exactly. So moving on and moving forward, when the question is, how do we know what's right? How do we figure out what we should and what we shouldn't do to our children? And one of the elements that we talked about was this notion or idea that I think as a parent, a lot of parents are, I think we're taught to focus on behavior and not necessarily the psychological or emotional ramifications of how we treat our children. Mm-hmm. And we never think about that because what if they're getting a spanking or something is bad? If they're getting a spanking, if they're receiving a spanking, then obviously you did something to deserve it. Mm-hmm. So if you're sad, then you should feel sad because you did. It's just a consequence of doing something bad. And the spanking or getting hit is also a consequence of that. So I think because we feel like the children deserve it, we never think about how is this affecting them emotionally or psychologically. So we're trying to figure out what has gone too far. Where do we draw the line? And like we was talking about before on air, I saw someone online earlier this week. And again, they were named nameless, but I've actually seen something like this before. I think her child bit a sibling. And she asked for advice on what to do. You know, how do I react or how I respond, which I thought was, which that in and of itself as a parent, to reach out to others for advice, I think is a big step.
Yeah.
I think that, especially when you're confused, instead of just trial and error, really asking. And what surprised me was everybody's response was to bite the child back.
Wow.
And pretty much overwhelmingly, everybody's response was whatever your child does, do it back and make them feel. They have to know what it feels like. So they won't do it again. I mean, literally, and this is all honesty, it really did surprise me. You know, I mean, I knew somebody would say that because I had heard that as a child.
Okay.
And I'd seen people in my I'd seen people in my family. Little kids bite somebody by kids. Shout out to my family. I'm putting on blast right now. But
I mean, kid biters out there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had seen it and I'd heard it, and it didn't shock me that someone would say it. It shocked me that so many people, the overwhelming majority, and I think that was the only response that people gave, was bite back, bite him back, bite him back, bite him back. The only way he'll learn is if you do exactly to him or her what he or she did to their sibling or whatever. And I said this before, I'll say this again. Of all the things that I learned at Howard, one of the most powerful things I learned in child development and about parenting is I had a professor say that one of the things that good parents know and understand is children will be children.
Mm-hmm.
Children are going to make mistakes. They're going to hit stuff. They're going to bite stuff. They're going to throw stuff. They're going to kick stuff. They're going to put stuff in their mouth. Children are reacting and responding with a childlike mind, with childlike intentions, and with childlike reasoning.
Okay.
So the notion and idea that if a child hits, you should hit them back, or if they bite, you should bite them back, or if they kick, you should kick them back, I think it's like it makes this false assumption that there is a real understanding of what I am doing as a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
I am fully aware of what I'm doing, and I'm fully aware of its implications. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting because, you know, thinking about a 2-year-old and what they process, obviously it's different than an older child. And I can see how a parent might think, well, you can't reason with a 2-year-old because they're a 2-year-old. Maybe if they feel it, it'll be the same. What I also think is interesting is that, you know, I got a dog and he used to nip. And one of the things you see about dogs when they nip is what they say is you bite that dog. I mean, but is your child a dog? I'm not saying that to people that do it, but I mean, just thinking about that, I understand it's hard with a 2-year-old, you know, particularly if they're showing some of those kind of behaviors. But just let that soak in for a second. Like, if that's what some people say about a dog, like a puppy, if a puppy's biting you, you don't bite him hard, but you bite him and he'll understand.
Yeah. Again, we gotta, you, the problem and issue is that, again, as I said before, you gotta figure out if you're gonna control your kids or parent your kids. And I think that our communities and our society has taught us, we've confused control with parenting. And I don't think that enough of us know what real parenting is, because parenting involves teaching lessons.
Right.
Parenting is always, I'm trying to give you a tool or teach you a lesson. And behind this lesson is here to make you a better person, to keep you safe, to keep those around you safe, or to help you help other people around you. Like, that is what parenting is about. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, again, I think that is where the confusion comes in.
It's interesting because how far do we really go with it? I mean, we've been just talking about physical punishment. But if we think about, you know, I was telling you, sometimes people will say, well, you know, so-and-so treats you like that. You treat them like they're treating you so they can feel it.
Yeah.
And then when you start ignoring them or doing whatever they're doing, whatever childlike behavior, we're talking about adults here.
Yeah.
Then you say, oh, well, now you feel me. And I think that's kind of how it is with kids. You know, we were talking about when you have a kid that's doing some bullying at school.
Yeah.
And you said something about another video.
Yeah, yeah. I saw, and it's something I show my child development class. And we start to talk about, is it cool to humiliate or shame your child? And basically what happened was this little boy was bullying, I think he was about 12. He was bullying kids at school, and his father found out. So his father goes, okay, I'll fix you. So his father gives him a poster board, and he stands him out on like a busy intersection of the city that they live in. He makes him hold a pink sign that says, I am a bully, honk if you hate me. Honk if you hate me, honk if you, like something to the effect of honk if you hate me and honk if you hate bullies. Okay, so people's riding by, honking, honking. And I started to, you know, the father's logic and rationale was, now that he sees how it feels, you know, he'll never do it again. As if the only way that he'll learn that humiliating someone is wrong is to humiliate him.
Mm.
And I don't believe that hurting someone who has hurt someone else is necessarily the right answer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But again, that and that gets into a whole other conversation for another day. You know what I mean? How do we stop people by killing? How do we stop people from killing people?
Well, we killed them. You know, my mind was going there too. Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, it feels like flawed logic.
Yeah, man. I got two things I'm thinking of. So I mentioned I guess I was a little bit of a bully when I was in kindergarten, but that was like during the period of time I was adopted. So if you just said to me like, oh, we're gonna bully you like you bully kids, you would have missed all the stuff that was going on with me, you know, just from getting used to that process or that transition.
Yeah.
Which I think happens to a lot of kids, whether it's that or something else. And then the simplest example I could think of, imagine your waddler, your little toddler pulling on your leg, annoying you. Right. And so you say, oh, how you like it if I just pull on your leg? You start, you know, yanking on their pants, and then they wet their pants because they was actually pulling on your leg for a reason. They had to use the bathroom. You didn't solve that issue. You just now you sitting there with a toddler with wet pants and you did nothing about it. And that's how I think it was, these undercover things that we're not really addressing.
And again, that goes back to our original point, is that I just don't think that the everyday average person on the street truly, I think that we always assume that behavior is a reflection of intention.
Mm.
I don't know if I said that right. I know what I'm thinking, but it's hard for the, like, I don't know if we're taught, obviously, because we've been studying psychology for a long time.
For a minute.
We understand that there was a root to most behaviors, if not all behaviors. People do everything for a reason, even if there are things that are not productive, things that are counterproductive to themselves. Like there's a root to everything, and that's a part of why we got into what we got into, because we're interested in sort of finding sort of the roots of why people do what they do. Mm-hmm. And I again, the issue and problem is that when someone's behaving badly or poorly, we just want to stop the behavior, and we never think about why this person is doing this. But, and that's probably because we're just looking at the outcome. The outcome of their behavior is somebody else is getting hurt, and that's not fair.
Right.
So we're thinking about being fair to the person that's being hurt, they shouldn't be hurt, but we're never thinking about why are you doing this.
It's not just that we're thinking about being fair. I think also, you know, it's hard for parents out there. You got PTA meetings, you got competitive parents, you got the parent who's also thinking, well, why is this kid doing this? It's not fair to the other kid, but also I'm not going to be an all-star parent. This kid keeps doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. What are the ramifications? What happens to the question is, what happens to the kid that you humiliate?
Okay.
What happens to the child that you make stand on the side of the road and say, honk if you hate bullies, honk if you hate me.
Honk if you hate me, huh?
You know, and how does he, is there a way to correct that behavior and not, you know, why compound one mistake on top of another one? There's already one kid that's hurt out of this process. Why destroy another child is my logic. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that discipline should happen and something shouldn't be done.
Right.
But it's like, why, you know, why destroy two kids? I think there's a way. Do we, again, so now, again, I lashed out at this other kid for whatever reason. I'm being a child with a child like mine, and it's wrong. Okay. And now I'm starting to feel bad about myself because everybody's told me I'm a bully. My sign says, honk if you hate bullies. All these people hate me. I'm a horrible person.
Yeah.
So now you got this kid believing that he or she is a horrible person. And the question is, what happens to that child from that point on? What type of identity issues does that child have from that point on? Does it make him want to go, okay, fine, I'll be the villain then?
I'll play the villain and I'll play it hard.
Yeah. And what's interesting is the villain is actually an attractive role to play.
Mm.
And I tell you why. You ever heard of people say, yeah, I'm a butt? Like I said, yeah, I'm a butthole. I know it.
Yeah.
I know it.
All the time.
And the question is, well, if you know that you're an idiot or you know you're a butthole, why be one? And I believe that it's an identity issue. I'd rather be the villain or the butthole than be nobody at all.
Yeah. And I think it's another part to it. I think it's, look, I'd rather give you a reason to reject or hate me. At least I can control that. You don't like me because I'm a rebel, because, you know, I'm a villain, because of whatever. I'm doing that. I'm controlling that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, again, I don't necessarily think that making kids endure, I don't think that they have to endure what they did to somebody else for them to gain an understanding. I think a lot of times parents just don't know how to explain. A lot of parents don't know how to explain things to their kids. A lot of parents don't know how to talk to their kids. A lot of parents don't. I think a lot of parents don't talk to their kids and don't know how to talk to their kids. Because I think, again, as a culture or as a society, we don't do a whole lot of talking.
Okay.
And again, it's not a parent's issue. I mean, I'm a parent. I'm not like bashing other parents. I'm saying it's a society issue. Mm. When somebody do something wrong, we lock you up.
Yeah.
When somebody do something wrong, there's a consequence to it. You kill somebody, we put you in an electric chair. You do something wrong, we lock you up. We put you away. So we live within a culture that perpetuates this idea when someone does something wrong, there is you get those people away. Obviously, if they did something wrong, it's something wrong. So we need to get them away from us good people.
Right. But, and you hit the nail on the head. I think people might be thinking, like, what are they thinking? There should be no system. Yeah. But I mean, but there's like a lot of different things in between when someone takes another person's life. Well, what about somebody speeding? They get a speeding ticket. What about, you know, all of these other infractions that sometimes have bigger consequences than one might think? I mean, if we just use speeding as example, one speeding ticket that affects somebody's insurance that, you know, goes and on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'd experienced that. But I'm just saying, all of these things that are like, you make an infraction and this is what happens. I understand we have to have rules, but it also puts us in a way of shaping, you're either right or you're wrong, you're good or you're bad.
Yeah. And, oh, man, I'm sitting up now. Mm. And that's the thing is, again, that goes back to psychologically the fundamental way that we see humans and the way we see people. We see people as good and bad people. And again,
yeah,
I told you,
yeah.
I don't personally believe in good or bad people. I just think there are people that do good or bad things. And I teach stats.
Yeah.
And I teach something called Z scores. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm tutoring a kid. This happened a while ago. He comes in. How's you doing your test? Got a 70. He's smiling. I'm like, you got a 70? What happened to the other 30%? He's like, nah. My 70 was the highest score. The next closest score to mine was 50. Okay, well, why is that story important? Your score, Z-scores teach us, your score means nothing unless it's compared to something else.
Right.
Okay? Scores mean nothing unless they're compared to something else. Now, back to this notion of idea of people and good or bad people. Your score means nothing unless it's compared to other people. The way we figure out that we're good people and good parents is we compare ourselves to crappy parents and crappy, quote unquote, crappy parents and crappy people.
Yeah.
So we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people to figure out if we're a good or bad parent. And it's important that other people see us as good parents.
Right.
Like I see people beat their kids in Walmart all the time. not necessarily because the child is doing something egregiously wrong that deserves a spanking, but everybody's looking at me and they're going to think that I'm a bad parent.
Yeah, and that's going to be horrible. We can't have that.
Yeah, so again, this notion or idea of how we fundamentally and philosophically see people. We see people as good or bad people, and obviously if you did something wrong, you're a bad person and you need to be away from the good people. I think that idea or notion, that societal and community idea and notion, filters down to the way we parent,
which has a big impact, because basically what that does is it leads to us shaming. Well, what's shaming? Shaming is when a person has a feeling that resonates that they're just not good enough. You know, I read somewhere that basically people, they struggle with two overall fears or feelings. Like, one, I'm not good enough, and then the other one is that they're just not going to be good enough. Some variation of those two things, and that starts with something like this shaming. I mean, when we talked about the video, that was kind of an extreme, but it doesn't have to be that. It's the 2-year-old that snatches a cookie off the table because they're hungry, and you say, "Hey, no, hey, we ain't taking that cookie. That's a bad boy." That's where shaming starts.
Yeah, you did something. Now, go tell your grandmama what you did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, go tell so-and-so what you did. Go tell us who, you know what I mean? Like, this notion or idea of how we embarrass our kids.
Right.
And I don't know. It's not an uncommon thing, though.
No.
And I wonder where do we get that from? And why we feel like it's okay to do our own children that way.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you, you know, I understand. Obviously, if you got two parents at home, somebody come home, they need to know what's going on in the house,
right?
Now call your grandma and tell you if she did. Tell you so and so what you did. Like telling other people what you did to embarrass you or shame you. Like, again, what are the emotional and psychological ramifications of that? And I think the problem is that none of us are ever taught to think about those things. We care about the outcome. My kid is shooting baskets on Christmas Day so he can make it to the NBA. I'm not really thinking about, you know what I'm saying? I'm not thinking about him missing the prom.
Right.
I'm not like, as long as the outcome is good, you know, the end justifies the means. And I think that a lot of times for a lot of us, that's what we think about. All we care about is outcome. Like, we're outcome driven. Like, that's the type of society we live in. Like, society really don't listen. Society don't care about everybody out there. Society don't care about your messed up childhood. You know what I'm saying? And specifically speaking to men out there listening, nobody cares. Nobody cares about your messed up childhood. Nobody cares about who didn't love you. At the end of the day, your job is a provider and a protector. And either you providing and protecting, you're a man or you're not.
Right.
And nobody cares about what's going on with you, if you can or if you can't, what happened to you as a kid. When you get grown, nobody will care. At the end of the day, what do you produce? You are as useful as what you produce. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that personally. I'm saying as a society, I think that's how we think about the world, and that's how we think about people, and that's how we raise our kids. And we don't think about, and then when people do grow up with psychological and emotional issues, we call them crazy.
Yeah.
Even though we made them crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we raised them to be crazy. Like they and we just expect for them to deal with it. I had some stuff I had to deal with it. I got through it.
Right.
And it's just something that I think that we view it's weird, man. We view trauma and we view pain. We view all of those things as a natural part of just a natural part of growing up.
Yeah.
Stuff happens to everybody. Everybody go through stuff, right? You know, mm-hmm. my mama put me through stuff. I'm putting you through some stuff. You're going to put your kids through some stuff. Like, it's like we truly think that having these sorts of bad experiences, a lot of times for a lot of people, is normal.
Right.
And we just feel like, just work it out.
And see, what happens is those people carry those ghosts into their new relationships. You know, everyone is sort of like a little boy or little girl in a male or female body, just trying to live in the world. And it's what's so complicated about it. Since some of these things people really, they're not aware of, or they feel like they can't talk about it, they just carry them with them and they show up in a lot of different ways. And I think one thing that parents don't really realize when they're doing some version of shaming is that they're breaking the basic thing that we need in relationships. Trust.
Yeah.
Like, how does trust work? Like Gottman says, there's like basically, John Gottman, he's a guy who studies relationships. He says basically like there's a couple components to trust. Trust needs you need to know that the person that you're in relationship with is honest. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You need to know that they're transparent. You can kind of understand, which can be hard for parents at different levels for them to be, you know, completely. They feel like certain things they can't show their kids.
Yeah.
They're accountable, right? Now, that's another big one because that means you're going to do what you say you're going to do. It also means that you have the ability to apologize, which a lot of parents struggle with.
Yeah.
Then there's ethics, that you're ethical, you know. And the last one is alliance. That's the biggest one. Like, how can your kid, whether it's actual physical or just emotional or some type of shaming that you might not even realize you're doing, it's breaking an alliance. Yeah. They feel like it's a little bit of betrayal. So he talks about trust and then betrayal being the worst. Once a person feels betrayed, it's like breaking a glass. It's hard to put all those pieces back together, particularly if you don't know if you've broken the glass. And then, you know, you're working with an unknown.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just stuck on this notion or idea of how this has become a natural part of the order. How has this become a natural part of the way we discipline our children? And how is it an afterthought? Like, we totally don't think, like we totally believe it's normal. Like, literally, I'm almost, and you know me, I'm never speechless. Mm-hmm. But as we talk about it, and more I think about it, the more and more I am, it's something that filters down from our society.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Again, it is a societal thing.
Yeah, yeah. We don't necessarily think about what's important is the emotional well-being. And maybe, again, maybe that's because we put way too much stock into what other people think about us as opposed to doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're always thinking about what other people are thinking about us as a parent or us as people.
Yep. And I think the other thing is sometimes your ghosts are so strong that you don't really recognize how those ghosts are affecting your children. So it's not that you're intentional about any of these things, but that the little boy and the man is doing the parenting. That's the father.
Yeah.
So as you said, a child will do child things. And I'm just saying, I'm not saying all aspects of the person are like that, but that's that one part that you're not really realizing is there, and it's coming forth, and it's what's doing the parenting.
Yeah, and it's something I say all the time. I tell people, it's like if you wear glasses, I always ask people who wear glasses, have you ever fallen asleep with your glasses on? And they'll say, yeah. And I said, sometimes you can wear them so long that they just feel like they're a natural part of your face, yeah. And you forget they're even there. And I think that just sort of piggybacking, speaking to your point, I think that that's how trauma and that's how pain is. Like, you've been carrying it around so long, it just feels normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always liken it to like a bag. You got this bag of rocks. You know what I'm saying? You just drag around this bag of rocks from relationship to relationship, and you don't even realize that you're not supposed to be carrying it or that it's even there. You know what I'm saying? And every relationship you get into, you're asking somebody to help you carry your rocks.
Mm.
And in the beginning, it's fine because they like you. And then pretty soon, their arm starts to shake. It's actually an exercise that I do in one of my classes. We sort of talk about healing. I bring in a big bag of rocks. I say, ask somebody to date you. And then the person is fine. After about a few minutes, their arm starts to shake. And what I tell them from that is, no matter how much somebody likes you or love you, everybody has a breaking point. Like, everybody can, like, there's only so much stuff. And people can only help you carry your crap for so long, you know what I'm saying? And instead of taking time to heal from our pain and from our trauma, you know, most of the time when we break up with people, we find something that they did wrong. Like, we never ask ourselves, what am I doing wrong here? Like, when our kids are doing something wrong, we spank them for the bad behavior. We never think about where it's kind of like, if I give a test and everybody fails, the first thing that, or if a lot of people fail, or if a lot of people don't do well,
right,
the first thing I say is, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
What am I not teaching well? What am I not going over well? Maybe I need to go, like, I instantly look at me, mm-hmm, and say, what am I not doing? And I think that that's, as in our intimate relationships, in our friendships, in my familial relationships, and particularly with parenting, that's what we never think. That's your kid. If your kid in these streets acting crazy, maybe you're a bad parent. You raise them. They yours. So it's like, if your kid's in these streets doing something wrong, if your kid biting people or hitting people or bullying people, I instantly would think, what am I not transferring to my child? Now, I'm not saying that you are. I'm not saying you're a bad parent.
He's not saying that, y'all. Yeah, I ain't saying that.
I'm not saying that you are. I'm just saying it's so easy to say you did it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you did this, therefore you're the bad party and you're the one that deserve to be spanked. As opposed to saying, I wonder, have I created a context in some way, shape, form, or fashion that is, this is your response to the context that I have created.
And which is, I think that's so difficult because people are dealing with their own shame. So that it's hard to look at ourselves when we can't do it in a less judgmental way. Like, so what does that look like? I mean, you can judge your actions and say, like, you know, I really would like to change this as a parent, as a person, you want to be more healthy, whatever it is. But can you do that without saying that's the whole of who you are?
Yeah,
that's what makes it so hard. It's like, oh, well, everything I am is a parent. So if I'm a bad parent, I'm nobody. Yeah. It's not even about being bad or being good. It's just that some things you do are effective. Some things are not. Some things are in context. Some things are bidirectional, you and the child. You know, it's all those things that I don't think we feel safe to really think about, probably because of the environment.
But again, it goes back to what we originally said. We aren't taught to think about people and ourselves that way. Either I'm a good person or a bad person, and I want to be a good person, therefore I have to externalize my behavior. It's like in any other abusive relationship, when the boyfriend hits the girlfriend, he first says I'm sorry, then after a while then what happens is cognitive dissonance sets in. Either I gotta stop doing what I'm doing, I gotta change the way I think about it. Mm-hmm. So then I start to say, look what you made me do.
Yeah,
I'm a good person, you're making me do this to you. It's the same thing with parenting. You know what I mean? I feed you, I clothe you, I give you stuff that you want, and you out here acting crazy, biting folks. Why you? That's, you know, like, it's just so much easier to. I just think that we all, myself included, and I'm not saying I'm perfect or have been a perfect parent. Right. Like, it's taken a whole lot of mistakes and a whole lot of trying to become more and more self-aware to get it right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to say that to the listeners. We're obviously not saying we're perfect. We're just having conversations. We're just, you know, thinking about these things out loud, the same things you guys think about, just maybe putting a new flavor to it. Something you can have a conversation about over the holiday table, you know.
Yeah. And again, like we said, the way to wisdom is to play the fool. Like, I'm saying this stuff because I have done all these things. Mm-hmm. I've done all these things parenting. I've had these things happen to me growing up. Like, I'm not like standing on the outside looking in, like trying to be judgmental. Like, I've done all those things. I've struggled with not spanking my kids because I was spanked as a kid, and you know what I mean, and trying to figure out what's the right thing to do and how to do it. And I've made mistakes and tried to correct mistakes and made the same mistakes again over and over and over. Like, so, like, that's a part of where all of this is coming from. I'm not trying to separate myself from the pack as being someone better or authoritative in so much as, like I said, I've done it all, I've experienced it all, I've been there. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I wasn't taught to think that way,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that a lot of parents and a lot of people in my life, when I've spoken to them about parenting, none of us are taught to think that way,
right?
So,
and I think the other thing, I've said it before, I just kind of want to highlight it. I think it might be for parents, like, this is what you've experienced, and we live in a culture that in a lot of ways has taught shaming from an early age on, and that's just what you've learned. And some of it might have to do with finding a way to break away from that shame yourself before you can, you know, see the other level, you know, so take care of the first level, then get to the second, which might not be easy. I was talking to a gentleman over the holidays, and he was telling me, I was reading one of my books, it was like happened to be a trauma book, and he was asking me a question about just having nightmares about his family, his parents are dead and gone, but he has nightmares about some things that happened. So he had witnessed some domestic violence stuff.
Yeah.
And he struggled with it because they're not here anymore, and he wanted to remember them in a good light. And I was just telling him, like, look, you know, your parents could be, have more than one side. You know, I think he struggles with it so much because he wants to just reject that dream. Like, that's like, you know, yeah. I just want to remember them in a good light. Like, they can't be people that have done both, which I think is, like, part of the challenge.
Yeah. And again, it's the duality, either you're good or bad. And I just think people are complicated.
Right.
That's what gets me. That statement gets me in trouble so much, because it seems like we're condoning bad parenting. It seems like the on Love Lines, cheating. I always talk about cheating, which is actually maybe the next couple shows, I think that's what I'm gonna talk about. And I don't necessarily believe that everybody cheat are bad people. I don't think they're horrible people.
Bet you get a lot of flack over that one.
Now that's not me saying I'm not condoning cheating.
Uh-huh.
I'm saying I think that people are complicated. I think life is complicated. I think relationships are complicated. You know what I mean? Like they say, a famous saying that I like is, failure doesn't happen overnight. Failure happens in steps and stages. I think just life is just complicated when we talk about why people do what they do and why they end up who they are. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, I don't know if, I just think people are people and we all are capable of loving and we all are capable of doing good and bad things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that is what it, and now we're getting into what does it mean to be good and what does it mean to be.
Yeah. I mean, before I know we're going to go back to what we were talking about and leave that subject for another day. But, you know, my parents work in correction. I can't remember which one of them said this to me, but it really stood out to me. They said, you know, just be careful how you judge people. And they were talking about prison in general, because you don't know what could result in you ending up behind bars.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, someone does something to someone you love, or, I mean, you don't know. I mean, that's not condoning anything that people do, but we don't know. The reality is we all have the spectrum of emotions.
Yeah.
And we don't know what might be the right thing that pushes one of those emotions, whether we call them good or bad or positive or negative emotions.
Yeah.
We are emotional beings.
I think this will probably get me in trouble too, but again, this is an organic conversation. So I saw a comment that somebody left about the lady who, I watched a series of videos of people who just sort of went too far with their kids and stuff. And one comment, somebody was like, I don't have that in me. I could never do that. I could never hit anybody. You know what I mean? And like really taking this moral, but this is what makes me moral, because I don't even have it in me. I don't have it in me to do those types of things. And I don't think that not having the capability to do something to me doesn't make you moral. That makes you incapable. Just like cheating. I could never cheat on my spouse. I don't have that in me. Well, maybe that makes you undesirable. Listen, if going to the Bible, not getting too religious, but there's this part that it talks about the meek inheriting the earth.
Yeah.
And that's always mistranslated. That's always, it's a misinterpretation, okay? And that is a misinterpretation of the translation. So people think that means the poor and the downtrodden upon shall inherit the earth. That's not what that means. That's not the word they're referring to when they refer to the meek. The meek in the true translation means he who keeps his sword sheathed, even though he wants to use it. And I know everybody's like, what does he know? Go look it up.
Yeah, you got some people saying that.
Go look it up. But it doesn't mean the poor and the downtrodden upon. It means he who really wants to go kill somebody, but they don't, because it's the right choice to make. So being moral, I could never hit my kid. I don't know if that necessarily makes you a good person or makes you moral. I think real morality is having it in you and wanting to and not doing it because you know it's not the right thing to do.
I agree. I think the other thing that is kind of complex about that is I think there are a number of people out there that will say things like, I don't have it in me. But really what has happened is they have repressed, like unconsciously pushed that down, or purposely suppressed it, and it comes out some other way. They're so angry that now they got a headache, or they're so upset they got a stomachache, or, you know, all of a sudden they lose their vision. Anyways, there's lots of ways psychologically this stuff can come out. And we're not saying that your emotional scale has to be all the way up to doing something, but you have to have a reality to know that, hey, you know, maybe sometimes I do have these feelings. I think sometimes people try to cut off feelings. But the problem with cutting off feelings, and people might be more likely to do it if they've experienced some of these things in childhood.
Yeah.
People will like the Star Wars reference, I guess. If you just shut out the darkness, then you won't be able to see the light.
Yeah.
Because you can't cut out one emotion without cutting the other ones. Now, you can be disciplined about your emotions.
Yeah.
That's different. You have to recognize they're there. But just saying, I'm just going to shut them off, how you shut just one faucet off.
Yeah. And that's interesting. Like, I may have mentioned this on another show. I had a friend that grew up seeing abuse. He said, I could never, ever abuse my wife, but he controls all the money. And at the root of abuse is control.
Mm.
So it's like, again, speaking to what you said, the root of it is manifesting itself just in a different way.
Right.
It's just not the same. It's not the same behavior, but that energy is still there and needs to be purged or expelled in some way. So he controls all the money. He's just not hidden.
Mm.
And he feels like he's better as he compares himself. But in actuality, you're controlling. You're just doing it in a different way.
Right.
So I don't know. Something to think about. Somehow or another, and again, myself included, we have to. This idea of control and manipulation, and it's not just a kid thing, man. We do our partners like, we do our family members like that.
Mm-hmm.
We do our partners like that. You know, we do our partners, our husbands, our wives, our boyfriends, our girlfriends, like. Having the upper hand or wanting control of the relationship or having control over the situation. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, and I wonder how much of that control, the way we treat our kids is, you know, again, we get treated like crap on our jobs and we displace that energy. You know
right.
what I mean? Like I get treated, you know, you see that with quote unquote daddy all the time, not my dad, but just in general. Air quote. I'm doing air quotes, people. That with daddy, you know what I'm saying? Dad goes to work every day, and he has to take another man's crap. So this why when I come home, damn it, I'm king.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'm gonna be treated like the man that I should be treated every day. I gotta take somebody else's crap, and I can't take it out on him. So this why I get my plate first.
Right.
This is why. It's my way or the highway. I keep the lights on here. When you get your own crib, then you do what you want to do. This is my house. Like, and I wonder how much of that element of control comes from somebody is controlling me and I can't displace that energy on them because I can't give it back to them because I might get fired. So dad comes home and he's real messy and real crappy to mom and she can't take it out on dad, so she takes that out on the kids. The kids can't take it out on mom or dad, so they take it out on each other or... They go to school and they look for, and this is how we get bullies.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, and it actually is. Like, when you look at the commonalities that some of these, well, as of lately, it's just become cool to be mean. And that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But you got this kid that's being bullied and being abused and mistreated at home. So he goes to school and he looks for, like, I tell people all the time, bullying is it's strategic. Like, you don't just walk up on anybody and bully them. You might get punched in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You look for somebody that's isolated and alone, just like you are at home. You look for somebody who ain't gonna get no help. You know what I'm saying? Just like you don't get help at home. And a lot of it is just looking for somebody to displace their energy on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Actually, I think that's real interesting because I think if we go back to this child that's being shamed in some way, it doesn't matter what the way. It doesn't have to be as extreme as the pot. It could just be, you know, a child or mother or father telling their child they weigh too much and they need to take a diet. That's a shame thing, too.
Yeah.
But either way, as they become adult, I think that's how we see it cycle in. Rather, it's, and it could be starting with society, but when they become an adult and they get into these relationships, you know, what kind of person they are in that relationship. You know, if they have to be independent to a certain degree, that's control. Or sometimes it doesn't even end up going outside. It's inside. What do I eat? You know, I'm just going to be, you know, nothing against people that are like vegan and all this stuff. But sometimes it could be more of a control thing. It's not necessarily a health thing. It's a control thing.
Yeah.
And like I didn't have any control in those situations where I felt like I didn't know what was going to lead to shame. So I can control this. I can control how many slices of cheese I got on this bread.
And that's a dope point. Like when I've spoken to people with extreme fitness drive, that's one of the things it's something that I can control. Literally, and again, not everybody. I'm not saying everybody is into fitness, but you know, I think that's interesting. That is that the manifestation of not having control or being controlled as a kid, or things happening to you that you had no control over. So now you're in a space and a place that you want and need control of something in your life.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a really, really powerful point for just a lot of us to think about, you know what I'm saying? When it comes to control. But again, I think that what's most important for myself and for all of us is to sort of, as best as we can, to understand how important the mental and emotional ramifications of how we treat each other and how we treat our children, how important that is.
The ripple effects.
Yeah, like we said, you drop a rock in a pond, you get ripples. You know what I'm saying? That's all it takes, is one rock to get ripples. Mm-hmm. So we should think about that, you know? Think about that. All right, again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Henson. Again, we're talking about discipline. And we're talking about, you know, how do we know when we've gone too far? And what are the things that play an important part in, not just as parents, but as families and as communities and as societies, how we choose to discipline our children, how we choose to interact with each other, you know, where do we get these things from? And most importantly, of how we react and respond to each other, how we react and respond to when our children and people in our lives maybe don't do things that we like all the time. Okay? So we're going to take a quick break with Brother to Brother. Stick around. Hello, hello, hello. Hello.
All right, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed your very brief break. We forgot to mention earlier that this particular session is pre-recorded. We're going to go ahead and do a wrap-up and give you some things to think about. We're going to continue our conversations for the next couple of sessions, but we're going to just give you a wrap-up of the big things for today.
Yeah. So, again, this is Dr. Hinton, and discipline goes above and beyond. We think that it goes above and beyond just that instant, but we're trying to figure out what are the lasting effects of physical, and not just physical punishment, but what are sort of the lasting effects of how you discipline and how you interact with people in your life, particularly your children, when they do something that you don't like. Today, one of the elements that we focused on was shame, was humiliation and shame. And most importantly, what are the long-term effects of shame, of shaming a child and humiliating a child? And to be honest, you know, there's so much individual difference. We're all so, so very differently. You know, it's not an X plus Y equals Z thing. Like, different people will react and respond to trauma, to pain, to humiliation, and to shame in very, very different ways. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that, and this trauma and shame, the one thing that we would like to get across is that to some degree, if some of these things aren't faced, if they aren't dealt with in some way, shape, form, or fashion, these things could potentially manifest themselves in your life. They could manifest themselves in our lives in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And again, the issue is, I think the issue is, again, as I said before, I know someone who grew up in an abusive home, and he grew up and he said, "I'll never do that." And the issue is, if you don't deal with the root of shame, the root of humiliation, the root of control, it may just manifest itself in a different way. Just because you know what not to do, it doesn't necessarily mean you know what to do. So it's like people see dysfunctional relationships all the time. But just because you know what's wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean you know what to look for.
Right.
What is right. You know, again, if I had my world famous example I've been giving for years. If I had a bucket of junk and I told you to pick out all the widgets, the first thing you would say is, what is a widget? Like, how can you find something if you don't know what it is? Now, that's not me saying that there's no hope for people. That's not me saying that there's no hope. But it's important for us to know that as painful as it is, we have to sort of recognize and give integrity to the experiences that we have as while we were kids. And it's important to understand that if those feelings aren't dealt with to some degree on some level, they could potentially manifest themselves in our later relationships. And we're talking about what happens to the child who was made to feel ashamed. You know, and there's so many things that could happen. The child who's made to feel ashamed and made to feel bad, do they develop feelings of not being worthy? Do they develop body image issues? You know, do they develop feelings of not being good enough? So, again, there is no silver bullet. There is no X plus Y will equal Z. What we do know is that unresolved trauma and unresolved pain and unresolved emotional issues could potentially manifest itself in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And the scary part is, if it's funny how I hate to say dysfunction for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe there's just some things that are more healthy than others. But like, it's funny how an unhealthy lifestyle can become your normal. And like, you don't know that it's unhealthy, or for lack of a better term, dysfunctional, because it's all you know. That's just your normal. And that's something that Dr. Chapman will save a little bit later in, and we'll extend this to a part three. How do you know if your normal is not normal? How do you know if your normal is maybe not as healthy as you think it is? We think that things are good and we think that things are right because they yield results. But just because you get a desired result, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right thing to do.
Right. And see, as we go into that, just to leave you on a little bit of a cliffhanger, it all weaves together. We're asking that question. We're thinking about that little girl in the video, or we're thinking about the little boy or the other little person that's being represented in your mind and whatever vision's coming to you. And we're talking about shame, what shame does. And if you think about shame, the main thing I want you to realize is that this person who feels shamed in whatever way, shape, or form, they feel unworthy. Some people refer to that as a poverty mindset, you know, but poverty, there's lots of different debates about, you know, poverty itself, but a poverty mindset is not enough, not going to have enough. Shame cultivates that. Now, if that's your base, that shapes, like Dr. Hinton was saying, though, that's the prescription of your glasses. That's how you see the world. So that's going to shape all the things that you do, even though you might not realize it. You might not be doing these things the same way your parents did it, right? Your control elements might be about other things, about exercise, about food, about work, about other things. They may also impact your relationships. They may present themselves in more of a physical manifestation, maybe some chronic pain. So many ways that you might see it, not recognize it. The one element I want you to take away is realize that what might have happened through shame is that you've lost your ability to trust yourself, to trust your parents, to trust others. And I mentioned earlier those five key points that came from Gottman, but I want to just reference another person for those people that want to know more about shame. Brené Brown would be a good person for you to go to. She's kind of like got a fan club around this whole issue, but good research, but she does have a fan club. But One of the inventories that she has, you can find online, is called Bravey, and it's a good acronym for you to remember how to build trust. So the B stands for boundaries. And when you have these incidents of shame as a child, your boundaries are being broken. They're being broken by, there are promises that may not be actual verbal promises. They're like unspoken promises. You're going to care for me as an adult. You're going to ally with me. You're going to be someone I can turn to. Shaming is the opposite of that. It breaks that boundary. Reliability goes along with that. Can I trust you, depend on you for all kinds of sustenance, not just physical, but also mental? Accountability, your ability to apologize or think about things that have been done that have never been apologized for. That breaks accountability. There's no accountability. The idea of a vault. So she says a vault is like, you can think about that like where you would put money. I tell you something, you keep it. Now, we might do this with our friends, but sometimes when you're shaming, you don't do that with your kids. You tell all your people about what your kid did, right? Maybe, you know, people grow up with these stories about how something they did was told to everybody, which was actually quite embarrassing, and it wasn't kept in a vault. That breaks trust. Integrity. The integrity of this parent, how comfortable they feel like they can be with this parent, and judgment in general. When there's an environment of shame, it makes the child, as they become an adult, even whether a child or adolescent, adult, less comfortable to share things with that parent, which might be more important to the parent as they get older. And then the parent might be less generous, like not have what we call grace with this child. They might get more grace as they get older, but if this child is not experiencing grace when they're younger, you know, you're calling them their behavior, they're bad, when actually that's just a behavior they do. Those are things that they internalize. So the fundamental thing I want you to think about that might be ruptured if you experience this is trust. Trust for yourself, trust for your parents, trust for others.
Good stuff.
So we'll leave you there on this time. I guess the takeaway for you today is there's a lot of stuff for you to think about. As we go into next week, we're going to think about ways for you to heal from this. And more ways to identify if this stuff is bothering you at all, because you might recognize that you went through this, but think it's no big deal. It hasn't affected you at all. So we'll ask more questions. But for today, I want you to gauge how much trust you have in your life. Do you see trust impacting what you do? Is it impacting your relationship? Is it impacting your relationship with yourself? And as you answer that question, you can come ready to get some information that might help you in the next couple of weeks.
Very good. Very good. And again, what's important is, again, as we've both said before, we'll say it again, it's so very important to remember that for the most part, people don't do what's right or wrong. They do what's familiar. And it's important for us all to ask ourselves, what is familiar to me? What is reflexive? What is reflexive? When you get mad, when you get angry, when you get upset, what comes natural and what comes reflexive? And it's important for us to ask ourselves, where did I get that from? Does this mirror how my parents treated me? Does it mirror how a significant person in my life treated me when I was building my identity or my sense of self? So good stuff, good stuff. Again, as we always say to those out there listening, we truly do thank you. We both really do mean it. Again, so many other things that you could be doing, and the fact that you took a few minutes out to sit with us and listen to us and dialogue means so, so very much. Again, for those that have questions, comments, or suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com. That stands for brother to brother psych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, that's b2bpsych@gmail.com. Any questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, perspectives you would like to share, and not just with this show, but with any of the shows, anything we've ever talked about. If you have suggestions or ideas, people that you'd like to hear interviewed, book writers you'd like to be interviewed, if you yourself have a unique story or perspective that you'd like to come on, definitely contact us. One of us will contact you and we'll interview you and we'll talk to you and we'll see if it's a fit, and definitely we would love to have you. Okay. So again, this is Keelan Hinton. Again, I want to say thank you and peace and blessings to you all out there.
Peace and love. Remember, we're all just trying to do the best we can on our journey.
tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all you stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail, I turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody.